Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 28 of a year-long conversation. Today's topic is all about abortion. We're going to be completing our trilogy of guns, immigration, and abortion. First, I'm going to bring up my co-host, Blue in Alabama's Michael. Michael, we are in between the 4th of July and the Republican convention, smack dab in the middle of it, and it's pretty exciting because we have America's birthday and America's death day all rolled into one.
Yeah, and right between the two is my birthday.
So. Halfway between rebirth and apocalypse. We were joking around off the podcast that if Trump, which he's not going to win, I'm pretty confident, but if Trump manages to beat Hillary by some miracle, I won't say miracle because that's usually a positive thing, but by some comet hurtling towards America to disaster, we'd almost have to have a secondary podcast called 100 Days to Disaster.
Yeah.
And, or 100 days to destruction or something, because Trump's first 100 days, I honestly can't picture it. I mean, I really can't even imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, you know he's going to be trying to do all kind of stuff if he wants to get into office. He'd declare war on 6 different countries. We would have, like, mass deportations of anybody that, you know, didn't vote for him.
Yeah, he would look at the voter rolls, and then it's filled with, like, illegal Hispanic who didn't vote for him or something. Like, Gutierrez, huh? That sounds a little bit illegal. He pulls some shit.
There'd be self-deportation from people that voted against him, too.
Like, I know. He'd somehow find a way to deport, like, Alabama liberal. It's like, no, this guy's, like, 8th generation Southern or something. Nah, he's a questionable citizenship. But I think he'd be the first president in modern times to struggle to fill a cabinet. All we have to go by, when you have a president who has no government experience, there's nothing to really go by. So you just have to go by The Apprentice, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
But when I would watch that show, which I'm embarrassed to say that the first couple seasons I did watch it, I've watched him basically make decisions, and it would usually come down to somebody who was extremely qualified and then somebody that he kind of liked in a sexual way. It would almost always go with, like, the hot blonde. The last season that they had before the celebrity editions, it was between this kind of fat guy who did a really good job and then this blonde woman that looked a lot like his daughter, and he went with her. And so, I mean, his whole cabinet's going to be basically like hot blondes that look like Ivanka, and then the Senate's going to be like, you know, we can't approve Ann Coulter to be Secretary of State. Like, we just can't do it.
Yeah.
It's Blake Lively can't be the Secretary of Commerce. Like, we got to have somebody better than for the Treasury Department than this. I mean, and I just don't even know what that would look like. I mean, it's funny because 4 years ago, I was really worried about Mitt Romney. Like, I thought he was a legitimate threat. I desperately didn't want him to be president. But that whole year between Obama and Romney, I was really, like, kind of anxious about it. Like, I was really dreading the election, and I wanted to hurry up and get there, and I really wanted Obama to clean his house. I mean, I thought Mitt Romney would be a very bad president. But I was very nervous about that result because I thought he could win. This election feels different. Like, I don't want to be overly confident. But we haven't seen somebody blow this big a lead since Dukakis. Hillary's got the biggest lead on Trump, and nobody's blown a lead this big since Dukakis in 88. So I don't want to be overly confident, but I feel like in 2012, I was like, oh, God, Mitt Romney, he can't win, he can't win. And this time I'm like, no, Trump literally can't win. He can't win. Like, he's not going to be president. And I think we know this. Business is not behind him. Like, this is the first Republican. This is the first time I've seen a Republican presidential candidate have no business support, which is very unusual. The RNC, since that is coming up, we've seen corporate sponsors pull out of the Republican convention. We've seen certain companies feel very comfortable, like, making anti-Trump commercials. Marvel Comics, which Marvel Comics is not known for being the edgiest voice in entertainment. They just released a new villain for Captain America that looks just like Donald Trump. And I'm like, if you've got a guy that people feel confident putting as a comic book villain, it shows that business does not support him, which I think is the death knell for any Republican candidate.
Well, you know, he talks about filling a cabinet. I mean, the guy can't even fill the speaking slots at the convention.
We'd provide this that we forget to put our hat in the race because we would be glad to speak at the convention if it would give us a platform. It would be millions of people or whatever. We get out there, they're like, oh, this guy's got Alabama in his name. He's going to be for Trump. And I'm like, here's why I'm for Hillary Clinton, and list 100 different reasons.
And
all the air would go out of the balloon. And at the end, they would still be like, well, he was better than Clint Eastwood 4 years ago.
Anybody.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Before we get into the meat of our podcast here, I mean, do you have any predictions for the Republican convention? Since this may be the last podcast we do before the convention starts, do you have any big goings on for what may go down there?
I have no idea. Like, this is going to be the most interesting convention possibly in history. Like, it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be great.
They've said that Cleveland is beefing up the police department and security because they're expecting massive riots. So they've said Cleveland is basically canceled, like any officers that were not in the rotation, they're going to be, they're really building up the police department and like canceling vacation time. And they're saying, no, you got to work that Republican convention because they're really expecting massive riots. I know a lot of liberals have said that they plan to go and like, you know, create a scene. I don't think they should. I think this is the perfect time for us to do nothing. There can be no better thing for us to do than sit at home and eat popcorn and watch the chaos unfold. Because you have a candidate that is ridiculously unpopular in his own party. I mean, he got George Will to leave the Republican Party. George Will is like Mr. Republican Party. This guy's been writing think pieces before there were think pieces. Before Huffington Post even existed, George Will's been out there writing conservative columns and all this stuff. And Trump made him leave the Republican Party. And I've never seen a candidate this unpopular in their own party. And if there was ever a time for liberals to stay out of it, because if we show up and start creating a scene, that's just going to unite the Republicans. It'll put them in a corner and they'll be like, well, we don't like Trump at all, but we'll be damned if liberals bully us. And so it'll put them on the defensive. And whenever people are under attack, that's when they unite.
Yeah.
So I think if we just disappear and fall back or whatever and watch it be Trump's people versus the pretty much everybody else in the establishment Republican Party, it's going to be a lot more entertaining, really. And it'll be a lot more destructive to them than if we show up and we try to hijack the chaos. And you're right, we'll get blamed for it. It'll look like it's our fault.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at all of the different measures that the Republicans are, I mean, like you said, the party hates it. I mean, Mitch McConnell won't even come out and say whether or not he's qualified or would be a good president or whatever.
Yeah, McConnell's like, they're going to have to waterboard the dude to get an answer out of him. I mean, they've asked McConnell, been like, do you think Trump's qualified? I have my feelings about that matter, and my feelings are my feelings, and my feelings will remain my feelings. I'm like, what is this? Dr. Seuss book, like, he's not making any sense, you know? I mean, I feel like McConnell's got a diary or something, and he keeps, like, who he's voting for in the diary, and he's like, I write in my diary, and that's my own personal business and my journal. Something that I didn't know about Mitch McConnell is that his wife is Chinese, and I didn't know that. Like, I had no idea that Mitch McConnell had an Asian wife. He probably does have very mixed feelings about Trump and his anti-immigration rhetoric. I talked briefly on this last week when we were talking about immigration. I mentioned that, you know, my wife as a naturalized citizen in America and her family is, and really when I look back at all my serious relationships and girlfriends, some might have been from the Caribbean or, you know, whatever. So there was, I don't think I've ever dated anybody that wasn't first generation or eventually became a citizen. And I think we talked a little bit off podcast about people's experiences towards immigration. Their opinions about immigration are really shaped about their experiences with immigrants.
Yeah.
And because mine have been universally positive, really the best you could hope for. Made me have a very different opinion on it than we knew a guy in Alabama where we're from. He went to the grocery store and he got into it with some Latino guy that he killed him. And instead of facing charges or whatever, he went back to Mexico and he was never prosecuted. And so his kids probably have very different experiences with immigrants and different experience. Like they're probably very, you know, anti-illegal immigrants because an illegal immigrant literally killed their father over a fucking grocery store parking lot. You know, it was like some argument that got out of control and then went back to Mexico. So that's like the negative side of things. So those people they might support Trump and that's their experience. But in my experience, it's been way more positive. I think most people in general in America, their experiences have been way more my experience than that experience.
Yeah, I agree. And people do this with everything. You know, they kind of gloss over the good thing, and then they really hone in and blow up the big thing. And you know, like the example, the man being killed in a parking lot by an illegal immigrant, that was a bad thing. I'm not saying that wasn't a bad thing, but that's just one example out of dozens we talked about on the last podcast talking about food stamps or WIC or whatever it is, you know, seeing somebody in a grocery store using it. That's just a small thing, but that's something that people take and they blow up.
Right. People study it and they said that, like, in general, immigrants are less likely to commit crimes, especially illegals, because they're avoiding police.
Yeah.
Like, in general, they're not trying to draw attention to themselves from the police department.
Yeah.
But, of course, there are people who break laws. And, I mean, when you have nobody in America even knows who they are, and there's no record of them. Of course, some of those people are going to be lawbreakers or criminals or whatever. Some of them are. But I think when you kind of look at it as like that's the majority rather than, I think those are the kind of people that are taking advantage, the way that anybody in any system takes advantage. Sure, the majority of Catholic priests are not pedophiles, but there's enough of them that they're taking advantage of the system that's set up to protect them. Like if you were going to be a pedophile, what better job than to be a Catholic priest? Because there's a system set in place to protect you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the illegals, 95% of them or whatever, would have no, like, you wouldn't think, like, let me go through all this trouble to get into America so I can rob a liquor store like that. That's not really something, like, they could do that where they're from if they really wanted to, if that was their goal. Like, people come here to fulfill their dreams, you know, like, their dreams are bigger than just ripping you off. But the people that would do that and would commit crimes, they're just taking advantage of the system in place. It's like, oh, law enforcement doesn't know who I am, there's no record of me. So you find people that are going to take advantage in any system, and they're going to exploit a loophole. They'll go where the loopholes are.
No.
Same way with tax cheats and the Republican Party. There's always going to be anybody that really, really is a billionaire and doesn't want to pay taxes. They're probably going to, you know, be part of the Koch brothers trust fund or whatever. Their big money machine, just specifically about Trump. I do think we kind of dodged a bullet, because if the nominee had been anybody else, that $1 billion that the Koch brothers are going to raise, that would have gone to them. Like, that would have gone to Rubio or Jeb Bush or probably even Ted Cruz. And so I think in that way we dodged a little bit of a bullet, because I remember saying that early on the podcast, I don't think it'll be Trump, mostly because I think that would make liberals too happy. Like, it's rare that Democrats get the nominee that they really want to face. Like in 2012, Democrats really wanted it to be Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, or like a joke, basically. And when we wound up with Mitt Romney, their most formidable opponent. And in 2008, kind of same thing with John McCain. I didn't really think it would be possible for Republicans to pick Trump, because that's exactly who we wanted to face. And I was legitimately worried about Rubio or Kasich or somebody like that. And I would have been really worried, because the Koch brothers, they raised that, I believe the exact number is somewhere between $850 million and $900 million, so very close to $1 billion, and that would have gone right into the pockets of that nominee. I don't know if Hillary Clinton could have beat Marco Rubio if he had that $1 billion. And plus, that would be on top of the RNC, who all supported him and all wanted him, and we're raising money left over right. So you could have had a presidential election where, really not kidding, both sides could have been upwards of $1 billion and maybe even $2 billion. I mean, it would have been an arms race. The presidential race would have cost what Pentagon spends on a tank from Lockheed Martin or something. I mean, it would have been crazy.
Yeah, you're right.
I think we may have dodged the bullet by him being the nominee. And something interesting in terms of abortion is that we talked a few podcasts ago about our social conservatives over, and as the twilight set on social conservatives, Trump is there. I think he's probably pro-choice in his heart of hearts. Like, I know he can't come out and say that, but he's very, I would say, moderate on most social issues, and especially when it comes to, like, gay rights. And he's actually come out to that the transgender bathroom walls are stupid. They're just a waste of time, which I thought was pretty interesting for a Republican nominee to say that. And when it comes to pro-choice, and people said that about Romney, they're like, I don't know if he's really pro-choice. I think in Romney's heart, he was against abortion. If he could have what he wanted, he would have been against it. But I think when he became governor of Massachusetts, he had to change, and he couldn't really be that way. But I think Trump and Romney, it's interesting that Romney really hates Trump. And yet the exact same things that are going to undo Trump, they're what undid Romney. It's exactly the same things. He polls terribly with black voters. He polls terribly with Hispanic voters. Women don't like him. Those were all Romney's negatives, and they're Trump's negatives too. And then you look at other stuff like, oh, he flip-flops. He doesn't even know what he's saying from day to day. He changes his mind so much. Oh, he's a heartless billionaire plutocrat who's for corporate America over you. I mean, it's kind of interesting that Trump and Romney are somewhat similar, almost the same person when it comes to, if you just look at the spreadsheet of them, and yet Trump can't even get Romney's vote. He can't even lock up the heartless billionaire vote.
Yeah, I mean, they really are. They're so similar, and maybe that's why they don't like each other.
Probably.
I could see Trump not liking anybody that's even close to him as far as wealth or anything like that. Trump's used to being on top. If Mitt Romney's in the room, he's like, oh, this is my competition. All hands on deck. I gotta destroy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, where people, you know, typically you'll meet people and they don't like each other if they're very similar. especially if they kind of get that alpha dog, but they've got to be the center of attention. They've got to be the middle of the room. We know Trump is that kind of person. Romney has a bit of an ego. Really, Romney kind of wanted the spotlight too, which is why he ran for president twice, and they had to talk him out of it. I think he wanted to run this time, but they talked him out of it. And I think that that's a guy who, with Romney, it was always like liberal, Democrat, Republican, whatever, I want to be president. And with Trump, it's a little bit of the same thing, where it's like, yeah, whatever, I want to be president. It's interesting that they do have so many similarities and really don't like each other. They are probably more similar than dissimilar. And I know Romney's head would explode, and he would say, I've been married to the same woman for all these years, and Trump's got three wives. And I'm like, yeah, all that's like your family history, and but really like who you are deep down, which is a politician with no core. You'll say anything to get elected, and God only knows if you're really a liberal or conservative, and people have these doubts about you. That's all the same. And the demographic that Trump does horribly with, Romney does terribly with. When we did our immigration podcast last week, we forgot to mention the Trump wall. And we did like a whole episode and didn't mention the Trump wall. And I guess that's because in my mind, it's kind of like the Chronicles of Narnia or something. Like, it's such a fantasy land project, it's almost not worth talking about. Like, I forget about it all the time because I just don't even think it. It'd be like somebody saying, here's what we're going to do about Wall Street, and then they keep bringing up Monopoly. I mean, when people talk about the immigration problem, building a giant-ass wall is stupid. I mean, like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Trump's going to build a giant wall on the border, and yet two-thirds of illegal immigrants come on a plane. They come to America, and their visa expires, and they don't leave. But they come with a visa or, like, a temporary permit or something, or their citizenship gets revoked, and they never leave. And that's two-thirds of undocumented or illegal immigrants. So how's the wall going to, you know, help that? I feel like Trump's going to be out there with that wall. And plus, there's charter planes. A drug cartel can take about 10 illegals on a charter plane and fly them over the border. They really fly over that border. And here's the lovely Trump wall. When you look out the window to your left, it's the Trump wall that we're flying over. They can make tunnels. I mean, look at El Chapo, the tunnel that got him out of jail had a goddamn, it was like an electric train car running through it that he didn't even have to walk. I'm like, you know those are professional tunnel makers when they don't even have to walk from one end of the tunnel to the other. So, I mean, he's taking this train car through one end of the tunnel. It had air conditioning and, like, lighting and all this stuff and probably, like, girls in the middle of it.
Yeah.
There's tunnels. There's boats. There's planes. There's 100 different ways somebody can get over the border without the wall. It's kind of like with drugs, where whenever they really crack down on drugs getting across the border, all that does is hurt the little guys. But the big cartels, they have state seals on their drug ships. So, like, they have state government of Juarez on a shipment of cocaine getting across the border. Well, it'll be the same with people, with immigrants, the big human traffickers, like the Los Zetas cartel or Sinaloa cartel. They're going to be able to get people across. And then your little coyote or whatever that gets two people on a mule or whatever, he'll be fucked. But by and large, it's not going to stop anything. And it'll be a giant waste of resources and really probably make Mexico less cooperative to stop immigration because they'll feel like it's insulting to them.
Yeah, especially when Trump's sitting there, like, hammering them about paying for it. So
I could just see Trump with a bill in his hand going to the Mexican White House saying, hey, he goes to Las Piñas, just what they call it. He'll go up there and be like, hey, he'll be on the front line with, like, a bill. Be like, yeah, you told me, like, oh, God, Trump's here again. You know, send him away. And, but, I mean, of course, if you really wanted to do what he's saying, you would build a virtual wall, which is like they use surveillance drones and satellites and heat sensors on the ground, and they actually might could pick up a tunnel or might could pick up people with going over the fence with a rope. Like, I love that press conference where Trump goes, there's no way you'd get around this fence, and then he goes, except for maybe a rope. Like a Looney Tunes character from the 30s could outfox this wall, basically, like Bugs Bunny can get over this thing. It's just stupid. But I think I brought that up in a podcast about abortion to kind of show that what Republicans want, a lot of it is just completely, you can't do it, basically. Like, it would basically be impossible to do it. And abortion is a perfect example, where if you really went around and made it illegal, because it used to be illegal. People forget that it was illegal for a long time. And what you basically had a system where wealthy women could afford to fly to Europe or Canada or somewhere that it was legal. And you basically had poor women who, by the way, are the most likely to want an abortion because they can't afford that for the kid, and they couldn't afford access to contraceptives in the first place. They were basically going to some back alley sleaze that lost his medical license or maybe never had a medical license or somebody that wasn't really qualified. And a lot of women died having an abortion because the guy qualified or they bled out or whatever. It was a very dangerous procedure. And that's why the law changed in the first place, was because it was so dangerous. And I think it goes back to, again, with guns, you make them illegal, you create an underground industry. you make drugs illegal and underground industry. Immigration, you're going to have illegal immigrants. And then with abortion, the same thing. It was an underground industry that was killing a lot of women every year, and that's what led to the law to change. If they went back to making it illegal, it would probably lower the number of abortions somewhat. By and large, you would have women turned into very dangerous options. Pills,
yeah.
Back alley doctors. There's a lot of things over the internet they could buy. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the second that they make it illegal again, the drug cartels are going to move into like some type of, you know, abortion pill, and they'll start selling that to a lot of women every year.
Yeah, and one of the things, talking about abortion, I know we haven't really got into it, you know, in depth, but I think part of the reasons Republicans are so against abortion, I think it, you know, kind of this inferiority complex, you know, we talked about Republicans, you know, predominantly, you know, white males, and when it comes to an abortion, saying that a woman has the right to do whatever with her body without a man consenting.
Right.
I think they just can't believe that. So they're still going back to the 1920s where the man, you know, man has the final say in everything. And
right,
what better
right.
way than have a Congress full of men tell women that you're not getting an abortion?
Well, I remember they had that panel on women's health and abortion, and it was
yeah.
five white guys that were like all had gray hair, like they were 70
yeah.
something years old, and they spent up there, and it's already really hard enough, it's probably too hard to get contraceptives, birth control pills and things like that. And
yeah.
it's like, oh, you have to go to a doctor, you have to get a prescription, you have to do this and this. You might go to a doctor that's a man, you might go to a pharmacist that's a man, and all along the way there might be three or four male faces kind of being like, ugh, what's this?
Yeah.
What's this prescription? And why are you feeling this? And Amy Schumer had a sketch where to get her contraceptive filled, she went through like four or five different judgmental people. All these men that are saying like, what do you want this for? And boy, you sure are loose and all this stuff. And all these like really like, you know, judgmental guys. And then at the very end,
yeah.
like if somebody said, I want to buy a gun, here you go. And they gave a gun to a 12-year-old. And it was like, it was easier to buy a gun than contraceptives. With a gun, you know, you need a license or whatever. But I mean, with contraceptives, I think it's way too hard to get birth control in America. And a lot of
yeah.
countries do it over the counter, and there's no reason it shouldn't be over the counter. And the only reason that it's not is because the Republicans have blocked it. They've blocked any attempts to do that. And I mean, when we get into like, you know, Alabama a little bit, I remember we had sex ed, so-called sex ed. People can't see I'm putting up air quotes. I'm putting up air quotes for sex ed. We had a coach. I don't even know if this guy's ever had sex or whatever, but he seemed really unqualified to be giving us sex ed. This guy was like a 60-year-old coach that he really didn't seem comfortable talking about it. He really didn't want to talk about it. I mean, it was basically abstinence-only education, basically.
Yeah,
and then at the very end, he was like, and if you have to buy a condom, don't, by the way, but if you have to buy one, but don't do it. Wait till you get married. You know, I mean, it was a very double-sided message. He was like,
yeah.
condoms exist, and then he would like acknowledging that they existed was as far as he was willing to go, which is more than we got for evolution when we got that in science. But he was willing to acknowledge that condoms existed and birth control existed, but I mean, it wasn't really a full endorsement. And most of the sex ed class was us watching videos of just the nastiest. I don't even think they were vaginas. I think they went and got a Taco Bell taco and broke it apart and took some of the beef out and put different stuff. I don't think they were real human vaginas. I think they were like mock-up, disgusting shit that they've made in some, like wherever they make, you know, Jim Henson's Muppet Creatures or whatever. I think they went and made these mock-ups of this filth. Like, hey, can you give me something that looks like a pink anthill covered in warts? Yeah, we'll do that. And it was just nasty. And it was basically trying to scare you out of having sex is basically what it was. And which, you know, being teenage boys in Alabama, we really appreciated that because that sure, you know, it was hard enough getting laid as it was. I mean, we really appreciated them adding all this to it, whatever, trying to scare girls out of it because they were already like not really forthcoming about it. But yeah, so we really appreciated that. I mean, it was already hard enough, and you had a lot of, I mean, in Alabama, sexual attitudes were kind of ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure that won't really come as a surprise to people, but I kept meeting, when I would go out on dates or whatever, I kept meeting born again virgin, which is the biggest scam. But there's never, I'll never do that again. When I moved to New York, I was like, thank God I'll never have to meet somebody who, because people were like, well, I would go on a date with a single mom and I had like two kids or whatever, and she'd be like, well, the next guy I marry, the next guy I have sex with, it's going to be when I get married. And I'm like, well, it won't be me. Thanks for coming out, but I'm just not, like, I've never been married before, so I think it'd be good if the guy I married, I was a virgin for him. And I'm like, well, it doesn't really work that way. Would you, you know, already, I don't, don't know. It just, so I think it was already some very, you know, different, I'll say different sexual attitudes and some very complicated sexual attitudes. And I think that adding on this fear of pregnancy and AIDS and all this, I mean, like any kind of STD you can imagine, I just think that that really, it made things so much worse and so much more difficult. You basically had a system where 1% of the guys, anybody that was having sex was like 1% of the guys, and they all played football.
Yeah.
And it was like, I tell you who was hurt was the regular guys, the regular Joes, the middle class guys and everything. Like the people at the very top were getting like any sex that was going on, it was all going to these guys. Like, well, he's so fine, I'll risk those herpes that we saw in that video. But then if it came down to like, well, this guy's kind of borderline, I'm not sure he's worth herpes. So if it came down to that, then people were kind of be on the fence about it. I think it was such a bad way to go through it. And I mean, people that went through those classes, I mean, they probably have had sexual hangups for years after that.
Yeah. Once again, the top 1%.
God. Once again, yeah, I mean, God, everything in America. All the wealth goes to 1%, all the ladies. And it was just like, I mean, Alabama is already ground zero for income inequality. When people talk about trickle down economics and income inequality, they're essentially talking about the plantation economy. I mean, they're essentially talking about where 2 or 3% of people owned all the slaves, and yet they somehow tricked the other 98% into fighting for it. And I think that it came that way when it came down to sex. And, well, boy, we just had some real bad mission creep. But yeah, let's get back onto abortion though. But basically, when you, again, I mean, when you tie into everything in Alabama, it's all kind of connect where 98% of people don't own slaves, but they're going to fight for slavery. 98% of people are not rich, but they're going to vote to give rich people tax breaks.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to abortion, Alabama is already, it's got the second highest teen pregnancy rate in America, and the second highest unwed mother rate in America, the second highest unplanned pregnancy rate in America. Mississippi, I believe, is number one in all those categories. Alabama's number two. And yet, our state legislature and our governor and our Republican politicians have tried to find every way in the world to limit abortion access and to get rid of every clinic that they can. In Mississippi, I believe they're down to one clinic in the whole state of Mississippi. John Oliver's got that joke, Mississippi's got four times as many S's as abortion clinic. And in Alabama, I think, I want to say something like five, somewhere between 5 to 10, maybe 5 to 7, something like that.
There's no more than five.
Okay.
I know about a year ago, they were trying to close one down in Huntsville. And if they ultimately failed, but if they would have been successful, there would have been one abortion clinic, which would be in Decatur, there would have been one abortion clinic between Birmingham and Nashville, and it would have been the one in Decatur, if they would have been able to close that one in Huntsville. But even with that one in Huntsville, when you, Birmingham to Nashville with two abortion clinics between there, that's ill. That's about a 5-hour drive.
They're trying to make it as inconvenient as possible. Basically, like they want it to be inconvenient. They want it to be really discourage people. When I lived in Minneapolis, the Planned Parenthood in Minneapolis covered the Dakotas as well. So like in Minneapolis, they had Planned Parenthood for North Dakota and Minnesota. I don't know if the Dakotas have abortion clinics of their own, but I know that it's basically, and you know, if you live in North Dakota or South Dakota, you're like, oh boy, we'll go to Minneapolis. And I mean, like, it's not something most people are going to do. Like, they're not going to say, oh, we're going to make a fun day trip out of having an abortion. Like, we'll go to Minneapolis, we'll see the Mall of America. People don't want to go on a vacation to have an abortion, basically. Like, they don't want to take a long trip to do this. And that's why they're doing this. That's why they're basically trying to shut down as many as they can. Texas has barely any for a state of its size, like the second most populous state in America. I mean, only California has more people than Texas, and Texas is the second biggest in terms of land mass as well.
Yeah.
They've made it to where they've shut down a lot of their abortion clinics, and that has to discourage people, because people in West Texas are not going to be like, oh, let's fly to Houston to have an abortion. I mean, they're not going to do that, and they know that, and that's why they're doing it.
Yeah. You talked about North Dakota. I mean, I think one of the things is, if you live in North Dakota and you actually find another person in the state and that person agrees to have sex with you, you're going to take a baby just so you can pass on that lineage.
In states that don't have a lot of clinics like Alaska and North Dakota and South Dakota, there's so few women there anyway. You know, in Alaska, there's like 10 men for every woman or something. And then in North Dakota, South Dakota, it's probably pretty lopsided. Yeah, you're probably right, to where they're like, well, there's so few women here to even get pregnant that we don't really need to. I don't know. So it's kind of like, you see it now, somebody's walking across the state and they have to hitchhike to get an abortion, and they see like one car coming down the road and like 2 days of walking or something. I mean,
it's funny you say 10 men for every one. one woman in Alaska, and Bristol Palin somewhere like, challenge accepted.
And I mean, she's a good example of Palin's extremely anti-abortion, and yet
yeah.
Bristol Palin cannot stop getting pregnant. I don't want to pick on her too much because it seems wrong to really make fun of somebody. It's
yeah.
not really a liberal thing to do that, but I mean, it is noticeable that the Palins cannot stop having kids. I mean, they're basically trying to be the Duggars, trying to
yeah.
be like the last version of the Duggars. So I think it's interesting, though, that, like, people look at me and they see this inconsistency of how can you be a liberal and be, like, pro-gun or whatever. I think of it like I'm pro-gay marriage, I'm pro-gun, pro-abortion. You know what that is? Anti-crowding, basically. Like, I'm anti-overcrowding. And that's what Colin Quinn, the great stand-up comedian, he goes, I'm anti-overcrowding. I'm for all these things. And really, this kind of comes into who you are. Because I look at the Duggar family, like there's people who look at the Duggars and think, oh my God, how inspiring. And I look at them and think, that's disgusting. Like
yeah.
somebody needs to lock them up. You know, like somebody's to, I mean, just because we live in America and you can have 20 kids, please don't. China, they got the one child policy and that's very oppressive. But just because in America you can have two dozen kids, please don't. Like
yeah.
seriously, there's a real divide about this. Like some people look at it as like the more kids you have, that's amazing or that's great. And now you see these big Republican families with like 12 kids or whatever. And I think a lot of people look at that as being kind of dated and, you know, anachronistic and sort of has no place in contemporary society to have this kind of a family.
Yeah. I mean, there's really no use for it.
Yeah.
Talking about ancient days, I mean, people had a lot of kids for one, hoping that one of them will survive to carry
right.
out your lineage. Two, so you can have additional hands to work in the fields or help out building or hunting or whatever you need. There's no need for that stuff, especially in America today.
Yeah. Typically, the most overcrowded countries on earth, like Uganda, parts of Pakistan, Bangladesh, are countries where there's a high infant mortality rate,
yeah.
you know? And it's like typically the countries where there's a really high infant mortality rate are also really overcrowded because people, they don't know if all their kids are going to survive to adulthood.
Yeah.
So they're having like 10 kids thinking like maybe two of them are going to graduate from college or something. And in certain societies, they look at kids as more like a means to take care of them. I think
yeah.
in America, look at it as like parents should take care of kids. And I think in other countries it's more like bottom up where it's like no, kids will eventually take care of their parents. That's why they're having
yeah.
eight kids. Like an investment plan. It's like a retirement plan for the parents.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can remember traveling to Hong Kong and the guy who was driving, he was from the Philippines and he was asking me questions. He's like, so in America, your parents don't live with you. And I'm like, well, no, not usually. And he's like, tell me more, you know, and he's all interested in it. He's like salivating over there, and he's like, and your mother-in-law is, I'm like, no, she doesn't. And then he's like going into all this stuff, and he's like, and when your kids get to be 18, you kick them out of the house. I'm like, well, you don't kick them out, but you say it's time to go do something or whatever. He's like, salivating over this, basically, the gleam in his eye, where he's, well, this poor bastard's probably driving a car and supporting 10 people, his parents, his kids, and all these different people. And I think that, you know, when we talk about getting rid of abortion rights, what's the number one reason that women don't want to have a kid is they can't afford it. It's a big economic burden on them, and people are stressed out. And you start making people have kids that they can't afford or that they don't want, you're adding this economic burden. And
yeah.
when we look at Republicans, then they kind of want to have it both ways, right? They
yeah.
don't want women
yeah.
to have abortions, but when they have the kids, they don't want to pay for those kids.
They don't believe
in any type of programs that would help unwed mothers or single moms or, you know, unplanned pregnancies or whatever. They don't believe in any programs that would help them. And
yeah.
like I look at it as like it's a fantasy land argument, really. Because when I ask, you know, Republicans, I'm like, well, you say that there's 1 million abortions a year. That's what they say. I don't even know if that number is still accurate because I feel like the rate has fallen now that people have had more contraceptives. But I'm like,
yeah.
you say you want to cut abortions, but do you believe in abstinence-only education? Absolutely. Well, that's been proven to increase the number of abortions because kids, there's more accidental pregnancies that way because kids
yeah.
don't know what the hell they're doing when they're teenagers and they don't even know what's a condom, a balloon animal, or what's the pill? Are you talking about OxyContin? Is that something we can take for pain? I mean, they're talking about drugs. They think it's drugs or something. And
yeah.
that's been proven to make abortions go up. Then you say, well, do you believe in easy access to contraceptives, over-the-counter use, and that teenagers can buy them without parental permission? No, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that at all. And then you say, okay, so you don't believe in actually preventing the pregnancy clearly. So the women,
yeah.
they have the kids, and they don't want them. They can't afford them. Are you the taxpayer going to come in and help pay for these kids? No, I don't want to do that either. And I'm like, okay, well, what are they going to do with these kids? Oh, they'll put them up for adoption. Okay, well, who's going to adopt them? Are you going to adopt
yeah.
them? No. Rush Limbaugh going to adopt them? Is he going to have a big house with, you know, 100 orphans come over there? Who's going to adopt all these kids that nobody wants? It's going to increase the foster care system and put a real burden and stress on that to where there's all these kids that nobody, you know, wants to adopt or whatever. But, oh, well, other couples will want to adopt them. In this era of in vitro fertilization, and basically there's different ways that people who used to not be able to have kids can now have kids.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about all these couples that 50 years ago would have adopted, but now they can have their own kids. And I'm like, well, they don't want them, so who's the one people in America that can't have their own kids and might adopt them? Gay couples. I'm like, so do you want gay couples to adopt them? Hell no! I mean, you start talking about, like, you know, gay men would definitely adopt these kids. Lesbians would definitely adopt these kids. Like, they would do this or whatever. And I mean, especially gay men, because they can't even have like a sperm donor. And you talk about, will you allow them to adopt these kids? No, I'm not for gay adoption either. And it's a fantasy argument. At every turn, you've got something that's practical and something that's like their ideals. And the ideals of, like, these kids, there's nothing. There's nothing that they're offering that would basically be a substitute to abortion that would be practical. And every step of the way, they're taking the way around it.
Yeah, and the funniest part is they say that, you know, they can be adopted. They're going to go into the foster system, and guess who's going to be paying for their time in the foster system?
Right.
We are.
Yeah, taxpayers.
So it's like, I mean, you don't want to provide tax dollars to help as low-income families or single mothers. You don't want to provide any financial assistance for them, but you're going to turn up and provide financial assistance for the foster care that they're going to end up in. So they can be adopted.
Yeah. I mean, so they've studied this, and like in the, you know, the Freakonomics, people might have heard of Freakonomics. They tried to figure out, why did crime go down in the early 90s? Because everybody was anticipating a big crime wave. They're like, crime has reached epidemic proportions. There's the crack problem, the gun problem, all these different factors that they were saying crime should have spiked during the Clinton presidency, but it went down. And they're trying to figure out, why did crime go down during Clinton's presidency? And it was abortion. What the Freakonomics guys came up with was, it was because it was about 20 years after they passed Roe versus Wade in 1972.
Yeah.
And it was almost exactly 20 years after that. And that meant that there was a whole generation of the people who would be most at risk of committing crimes had never been born. Different people get mad about this when you start talking about it this way, but typically the people that be most at risk of youth that might be people that were candidates for abortion in the first place, because their mothers might not have afforded to have them. They might not have wanted them. Their situation might not have been good. They might have been on drugs at the time. There could have been a health risk involved with the baby. There could be developmental problems, all these different things. And that was a generation of kids that didn't get born because of Roe versus Wade. And that, they linked that to the crime rate going down. Now, this is a big debate in liberal circles. A lot of people, you talk about this in liberal circles, a lot of liberals get mad and they don't like hearing about this and different things like that. I think it needs to be trumpeted loudly, because I think this is important to talk about, because it's a case where people have to understand what overturning Roe versus Wade and what going back to a system without abortion, they have to understand what that would really mean. And I don't think that they're really understanding all the practicalities of it.
Right. I could see that being a factor of it. Can't really judge something that never happened. So you can't say, you know, well, the reason crime went down is because these kids weren't born who would have committed these crimes. It's hard to say they're going to. I mean, they may be born in a situation because of background that they likely could have, but at the same time, they could, I mean, maybe something happened and they, you know, changed. You know, I mean, my mother was adopted. She was in the system up until she was, I think, 10 years old. And, you know, she was adopted. And, you know, she, you know, I mean, like I said, she's from the system, but she's one of the lucky ones that actually got adopted. And, you know, she, the whole time she was in, she never did anything bad. I mean, of course, she was a child, but still, I mean,
right.
So, these kids, I'd say it's a possibility, but it's hard to say definitive.
Just think, folks, we could have seen the end of Blue in Alabama before it got started. You may not be here talking to us today. What if there was some Back to the Future plot and your hand starts like disappearing in front of your face? You're like, wait a minute, what happened? When we talk about like hypothetical scenarios, I think people get at the emotionalism of abortion to where, you know, when you talk to a Republican, every kid that wasn't born could have been the next Tiger Woods. or the next Michael Jordan or the next,
cure
cancer or something like that. Like, and they always say that too. And I'm like, boy, there should have been a lot of cancer cures by now, right? Like, there should like 10 million people should have cured cancer by now, because they always say that. They always kind of put it in those terms of what could this kid have been? And I think that that hits people in a very emotional place, because when you think about a kid that hasn't been born yet, there is a lot of possibility and a lot of potential and a lot of, like, you don't know what they're going to be. And I think that, like, that definitely, that's the emotionalism of the argument. I can see that. But I've known a lot of other people, and I'm talking about a lot of people, especially being from Alabama. I know a ton of single moms. I mean, a ton.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've joked about before that, I mean, if you're a guy and you want to date somebody after the age of about 22, 25, it's probably going to be a woman who's got kids. And it becomes harder and harder to find people that don't. And I can't say that their lives were better because they had kids, because people get really sensitive about that. They get really mad about that, and they get very defensive about it. But sometimes, like, it's just kind of a tough thing to talk about, really. Like, it's kind of a tough thing to get around and talk about, because you can't really, like, go to a woman and be like, having that kid, well, that really ruins your life. You know, you can't really say that. But at the same time, it is true sometimes. Like, I mean, people really hate it when you say that. They really don't like it, but it is true sometimes. And I think there are people that do have kids, and it really derails their life. And that's not true for everybody that has an accidental pregnancy or an unplanned pregnancy. That's not true for everybody. But I did know people that, a girl got a Gates scholarship. She got a Gates scholarship, which is a really big deal, and she got pregnant like her senior in high school, and it was some loser, some thug, and she didn't go. She didn't go to college. And that is a life that was deferred. And I know people would say, well, I'm a mom. That's the greatest thing in the world. I mean, of course they're going to say that. Like, at that point, after they've had that kid or whatever, what are they going to say? Like, oh, this little bastard ruined my life? Like, no, they can't say that. You know, like, I mean, they can't say, like, oh, this changed my life for the worse. And they can't say that. And so I look at it as sometimes, like, so for me, I mean, a personal experience or whatever was, I had to go to a clinic with somebody. When you go in the waiting room of the clinic, the waiting room is the most depressing place I've ever been in my life. You know, like, it is really not it's like the whole of a Russian refugee ship, basically. Like, it is like people are there, some people are crying, some people are very emotional. When we got there, outside the place, there was like two people that were protesting, but they were kind of a weird, it was really strange. Like, they were kind of there, but they were there, like, they didn't want to be there, you know, like, they had a sign, and they kind of had the sign beside them, and they didn't really say anything, you know. It was more like, oh, you shouldn't do it, and it was really mumbling and under their breath. Like, it was sort of like they were embarrassed to be there, and they were kind of ashamed to be protesting. And so it's kind of funny to meet, like, the reluctant protester. You know, like, to find somebody who's like, I don't really believe in this, what I'm doing, but I'm here, you know. And, but I think it's stupid. People who go to the clinics and they're out there and they're screaming obscenities or whatever, I mean, I think that's ridiculous, because people, if you've ever been there, you know, when you go there, nobody who's there wants to be there. Like, it's not their first option. Like, it's not like, oh, I was going to go to Vegas for an abortion clinic. No, like, you don't want to be there. You don't choose to be there. And then the people outside that gate would be like, no, you did make a choice. You're here because you want to be. It's not, anybody who's out there with those signs and screaming stuff, and then they bring their own kids, and they make their own kids hold up a t-shirt, like, don't abort me, they're assholes. Because that's just making people feel terrible at really a low point in their lives. Most people who are there, that's one of the worst days of their lives. And I know people would say, no, it's not like, you know, some liberals might be like, no, it's like getting a, you know, like, you go in and it's a procedure and you come out and you're all the better for it and you go get froyo afterwards. And I'm like, well, it wasn't quite that unemotional. Like, I mean, I don't believe in what Republicans say where it's like it's something that haunts you the rest of your life and you never get over it. I don't believe that. But some liberals have been like, well, it's not really that big. It's somewhere in between. Like, it's a bad day.
Yeah.
It's a bad day. But in your life, you're going to have bad days. Every day in your life can't be a good day. You're going to have some terrible days.
I think that's why I get angry with Democrats when it comes to this issue, because they want to dehumanize the process. So it's like, well, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's not even a child. It's just, it's not a big deal. It doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, you know, even if you are somebody going for an abortion, that's still, you know, because you know that has potential to be the child. You can't say, oh, well, it's messy. So, like you said, it's just a procedure. So, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal for that person. I mean, they're not going in there not feeling anything. I mean, you may have one or two.
It's kind of a thing to where I think Democrats wouldn't do that, except that they're under attack. Like we kind of circle back to the very beginning of the podcast, where if liberals show up and they start attacking Trump, it's going to unify the Republican Party in a way that they wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
I think if it wasn't like when the Republican wave came in, the Tea Party wave, we've seen state after state after state limit abortion access and make it harder and harder and harder. I mean, we've seen clinic after clinic get closed, and even so-called moderate Republicans like John Kasich. This guy was Mr. Moderate, you know, 2016. He's not really a moderate, and he's definitely not a moderate when it comes to abortion. I mean, he's practically going around personally shutting down each one of these clinics because the guy's like a fanatic Catholic or something. He doesn't believe in an abortion. I think what it is that we can't really say that now because it's so under attack. Bill Morris said, like in a state like Mississippi where there's one clinic, he goes, could you, you know, abortion is legal. Whether Republicans like it or not, it's legal. Like, and if you, and like guns are legal. Can you imagine a state that had one gun shop in the whole state? You know, you go, there's not a state in America that's got one gun shop. So when you get a state that's got one abortion clinic, I think, you know, all this debate about guns is kind of taking place in a vacuum where guns are more popular than they've ever been for certain people. Gun ownership, in terms of the number of people that own guns, is down. But the number of guns being sold is up because the gun nuts are buying 20, 25 guns. We've seen people stockpile in guns or whatever like that. But, I mean, this whole thing is taking place where guns are really a booming business. The abortion debate, which is sometimes a lot quieter than the gun debate, is taking place where abortion is really under attack in a major way. Two-thirds of the entire state congresses are controlled by Republicans, and two-thirds of the governorships are controlled by Republicans. And that's given them, since 2010, I mean, when the Tea Party came in, it was all about, we don't care about the social issues, we're here about the deficit, the debt, and they're like, and the best way to fix the debt is to make abortion illegal, you know? It was like, I mean, they went in as fiscal conservatives, and they came out, and when they got to the legislation part, it was all about getting rid of the abortion clinics and limiting gay marriage and things like this. It's really become the Trojan horse. And in Alabama, even though it's legal and there's clinics that do it, there's still so many restrictions. I can think of a case where a woman was pregnant and she knew that it was going to be a stillbirth. Like, they basically knew that the baby, like, it wasn't dead yet. It was inside of her, but they knew there was going to be complications to where the baby wouldn't be born the correct way. But because she was in her last trimester, they couldn't do a late-term abortion. So when certain states have this late-term abortion ban, even though they knew that there was, like, a chance the mother could die, basically there was about a 15% chance she could die having that kid that they knew was not going to really live long. Even if it had been born alive, it wouldn't have lived long anyway. A couple months, maybe. So this is a case where having like late-term abortion bans, even in the case where abortion is legal, there's all these things, late-term abortion bans, and you got to go through an ultrasound where they make the woman go in and they give them an ultrasound, which is really cruel. I mean, that's really bad to make them do that, to go through this process. And they make them do all these different steps, and it's all trying to get you to discourage any single abortion you can. And it's wrong for something that is legal. Like it or not, it is legal.
Exactly.
And then this fantasy debate. I mean, the whole issue is a fantasy, but on the Republican stage, the Republicans were up there, and it was like eight guys, and they were debating in the presidential primary. I believe in abortion of the case of rape only. Okay, I don't believe in the case of abortion for rape. I believe in abortion for a case of incest only. I only believe in an abortion if it will save the life of the mother. And then there was rape, incest, save the life of the mother, and they were all going back and forth about which, you know, fantasy scenarios they would allow. And I'm like, hey, assholes, it's been legal for 40 years. Like, they're up here talking about fantasy restrictions on something that's legal and has been legal for 40 years and is unlikely to become illegal anytime in the near future. And they're up to, and you know, Rubio's up there like, I would not allow abortions for any circumstance. I'm like, well, it's great that you live in fantasy land, but it's legal. Like, I mean, I don't know what they're talking about. Did you know that was interesting that this debate seemed to be happening in a bubble where abortion is somehow up to them to determine exactly which cases they would allow to go through and which ones they would reject?
Yeah, it is, because, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It's not like they can just snap their fingers, just end abortion. I mean, it doesn't matter. Even if they do become president, the president can't overturn a Supreme Court order. So, I mean.
Yeah. This issue, when you really talk to, like, Republican politicians one-on-one, they're not really against abortion. Because, off the record and off camera or whatever, they'll admit that if you really get rid of abortion, you would have a lower-class boom like you couldn't believe. Because you're talking about a million more kids every single year that are being born, almost exclusively to lower-middle-class and lower-class families. They don't believe in that. that because they don't believe in, like, increasing the lower class to an extent where it requires more money to go into social services.
Yeah.
So they don't believe in that. So privately, they don't support it any more than I do. But it's just that they're using this issue. They've used this issue for a long time. This is really their bread and butter issue to get the evangelical vote and the Christian right and all these different. Now with Trump, you think we'll begin to see a shift more towards anti-immigration sentiment? Because, as I said before, I've known Alabama politicians that when they campaign, people ask them a lot about, mostly about immigration. That's the biggest thing people would ask them about.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have the fucking tax assessor be like, what are you going to do about immigrants? You know, people whose jobs have nothing to do with that get asked about immigration. And then a little bit guns. Some people ask about guns, but they said, you know, I was surprised that abortion didn't come up that much. Like, it wasn't something that came up. And a lot of times the voters don't bring it up as much as the candidates do. Like some of the state representatives that ran in Alabama, they brought it up all the time. And they talked about it a lot. And it was something that they wanted to use as a wedge issue. Do you think we might see that as a wedge issue go a little bit in the background and immigration come a little bit more forward in the future?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at, you know, Trump's candidacy, I think you could see that, definitely see that right now becoming a wedge issue. When you look at the increasing number of non-white people living in the United States, obviously it's going to become, you know, kind of a wedge issue. And, I mean, I don't think abortion is going to go away, but I think that this is going to become a wedge issue. And until really you have a Republican Party that's open and embracing minority. I think if once you have that, I think, you know, you could have, you know, this kind of the issue not having a wedge issue any longer, but I honestly don't know if I can see that happening.
So let's just compare stats to around the world, like internationally. America has, I mean, we are the gun country. We got over 300 million guns. The ratio of humans to guns is about 1 to 1.
Yeah.
And then we look at immigration, which a lot of people think America is a xenophobic place. Not at all. We actually have by far the highest immigration rate of any country in the world. We got the highest first generation rate of any country in the world. Something like almost 15% of the population is either first generation or immigrants to America. So that's really high. No other country is even double digits.
Yeah.
But when we get to abortion, we don't have as many abortions as a lot of other countries do. And of course you got places like China where it's mandatory. We obviously don't have that. But even getting into like Europe and Australia and places like that, if we did what they say they want to do, which is a ban on abortion, make it illegal again, we would be the only industrialized country in the world right now to do that, to have it that way. There's no others. Some people say civilized, some people say first world, some people say industrialized. Whatever your definition, there's no other industrialized country in the world where abortion is illegal.
Yeah.
And so, fantasy land, right? Can't have it. You just couldn't do it. And I think that other countries have it legal because they know what it means. You can't, the bottom line is that you can't force a woman to have a kid she doesn't want.
Yeah.
And that's just the bottom line. I mean, if a woman doesn't want to have a kid, you can't force her to.
Yeah. And I think looking globally, you have to look at this from a common sense point of view. I mean, we have enough resources for about 2 billion people in the world. I mean, to sustain about 2 billion people in the world, and we have 8 billion.
I mean, there has been a population explosion that the world was never meant to sustain.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to see some of the population fall off a little bit. Like, it's got to happen. I mean, it's already, we're probably going to have an episode about environmental issues and global warming soon, because that's one thing we really care about that people almost never, I'd say if I had to rank the issues that I'm most liberal on and care most about why I'm a Democrat, probably climate crisis and environmental stuff would be number one. But I think for me, abortion definitely in the top three, because it's just one of those things to where if you're forcing women to have kids they don't want, then it's already way more intrusive and less free America than I believe in.
Yeah.
I don't believe in really doing that and deferring a lot of women's lives that they were going to go on to do something else or that they don't want to do it. No other industrialized country in the world has it. And I think that we're looking at a place where typically the countries that are the most prosperous are countries with lower birth rates. I know there's a big debate between economists where they say that you got to have really high birth rates to sustain your retirement population. Like Robert Reich and all these economists, they've kept saying that we need more and more and more, you know, kids and immigrants and things like that because there's more people going into the retirement system. The baby boomers are aging out.
Yeah.
You need yeah. more people to work to support the baby boomers, their pensions and their Social Security and stuff, I think you can't do it. Like, I think to try to maintain that type of population growth is a fool's errand and a suicide mission. I mean, you can't really maintain that level of population growth. And when you look at the countries that are really doing well right now, Scandinavia and Japan, you know, these are wealthy countries, and people keep saying, oh, they're not going to stay wealthy because they've got such low birth rates. Their low birth rates are going to doom them in the end. And I'm like, well, they've been wealthy a long time. People have been saying that a long time, and they're still doing pretty well. And countries that are not doing pretty well, like, as I mentioned, Uganda and Bangladesh and parts of India, Pakistan, these are countries that have too many people, and they don't have enough jobs for the people they've got. I mean, there's no way to support them people. So I think that you just can't have a country that's so overcrowded, and then especially people that don't want to have kids. And that's what I would say in the end. And I don't know if this is going to come up. I'm sure it will come up during the Republican convention, so I can only imagine that we'll see that there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it will, but then again, you can't see Trump bringing it up. So I would have to imagine it's going to be somebody else, because...
Oh, yeah, probably one of the speakers.
I just can't see Trump making that an issue.
He's in a tricky place, because it's like Republicans have used it for so long.
Yeah.
This has been the bread and butter to trick hillbillies into voting for the Republican Party and tax breaks for millionaires. This is one of their big issues that they use, but at the same time, he's already polling horribly with women. Like, his numbers are already dog shit with women. If he really comes out full blast against abortion, against the first female president, when he's already losing, he's losing women by a big margin, but especially single women, he's losing them by an enormous margin. And this is what cost Romney the presidency, because he did so bad with single women. If he'd have done 10 points better with single women, he'd beat Obama. But he did terribly with them. And so I think if Trump is savvy enough, he's going to be like, who cares about abortion and stopping it? Man, I'm already going to get them anyway. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.wordpress.com.
Of course, you can find me at AlabamaLiberal.com. Join us next time when we get more into the shit show that will surely be the conventions.